Hey guys, welcome back to a new episode of the Whitetail Theories podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy McKinney, and I'm with two of my good friends tonight, Adam Cooper and Derek Brennan, and we're going to be talking about turkeys. So Adam, why don't you start off? I'm going to briefly introduce you as a great friend of mine. One of the few guys I do feel is a very good turkey hunter. Adam, just talk about a little bit of your background in turkey hunting and some of your other experiences in the last couple of years.
Well, started out mostly turkey hunting upstate Pennsylvania, big tracts of public land, pretty steep stuff that's a absolute blast to turkey hunt in my opinion. And to this day, my belief is if you can kill a public land Pennsylvania gobbler, you can kill a gobbler anywhere in the country. But yeah, mostly hunted upstate for, I don't know, 5-6 years really before I hunted anywhere else. And then was fortunate enough after graduating college to go out to Nebraska for 2.5 months, do a little guiding for turkey out there. Completely different ball game, but it's phenomenal turkey hunting and some awesome experiences. Meeting cool people from all walks of life, different styles of turkey hunting, learning all that. And now I'm back here in Pennsylvania hunting, time's limited anymore. So I hunt a lot of smaller woodlots down home, but still going upstate every chance I get to chase the big woods timber gobblers.
Awesome. And I look forward to hearing some of the stories and advice that you have from your travels turkey hunting. And on my left-hand side, I got Derek Brennan. And Derek, he's a great friend of mine. And you want to talk about a guy that gets excited about turkeys. He's always calling, playing with calls. And he just in general, just loves all aspects of turkey hunting. So Derek, why don't you introduce yourself and just talk a little bit about what you like with turkeys.
Yeah. So I was kind of like Adam in a way. Growing up, it was like the upstate hunting, big woods. It was just like a family thing. You know, everybody gets brought up sometimes in the turkey woods or just in the deer woods, but like it was just everything. And when I first turned 12, it was turkey season. So that was the first thing I was actually able to hunt on my own and in the springtime. And it was just, I was hooked ever since. And to this day, I just have that passion on going out and just hearing those birds rip in the morning, man, you can't beat it. Just chasing them. And it's probably right up there with bow season, hunting a rut. So yeah, I love turkeys.
Awesome. So we got two great guys here, and tonight we look to give some insight on some different styles of turkey hunting and hopefully some tips and techniques to help you have a better season. So I just want to start out saying that, I was fortunate enough. My dad took me turkey hunting as a kid, and I was fortunate enough to get a turkey my first year as a 12-year-old youth. And some of the tactics that we used then, we still use them to this day. And there's some things that I've learned and evolved a little bit as a turkey hunter, in the last several years. But the first topic I want to talk about a little bit is what really resonates in my blood with turkeys. And that's just the running and gunning aspect. So, Adam, I know you know exactly what I mean by run and gun. Not everybody listening knows what that means. But why don't you just kind of fill everybody in just what run and gun is, what it is to you, and how we can apply some of those tactics.
Well, hunting upstate, you're super fortunate to have the access to the amount of public land we do. I mean, I know out of the back door of my cabin, Jimmy's cabin, the cabins Derek go to, I mean, we can go out the back door and have access to 500,000 acres of public land, which is tough to do in just about any state. And it's crucial for hunting turkeys because you can get carried away quick and all of a sudden you're 10 miles from camp and you're still on a bird. But run and gun, you usually start off in the morning where you think there's going to be a bird roosted and hope to hear them off the roost. But like I say, what's plan B? And plan B is start walking. Just keep walking, use the terrain to your advantage, try and stay on the tops while you're trying to locate a bird. I usually try and map out an area where if you're fortunate enough to have two vehicles with you at camp, park one at the top where you want to start and plan to walk all day till noon and try and find a ridge line on a map ahead of time that you can keep walking and calling down hollows as much as you can and until you strike one up. Because usually, it all depends on where you're hunting, but usually if you're walking all day, you can strike up a bird. Now, whether he wants to work or not is a different question, but if you're especially in Pennsylvania, if you're willing to walk, we have a good population of turkeys. You'll usually strike up a bird, and you know, and if it's you're working for an hour, you're working for 3 hours. If it doesn't work out, just keep walking, move on to the next one. You know, just use the terrain to your advantage. You know, try and stay on tops, and that's what we mostly do, and we've had good success with it.
Awesome. So that's excellent stuff there. And it made me think of a turkey hunt in particular that we did, Adam. We can probably tell the story in a little bit, but just to reiterate, when you talk about the tops, you know, in Pennsylvania, we have a lot of like logging roads and access roads like that. And is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Pipelines? Yeah. I mean, there's pretty much everywhere in Pennsylvania has been cut at some point. Logging roads are awesome. If you can use a bike to get back in, to get way back in to start your day, that's awesome. But you know, there's a lot of spots that just don't get pressured up there, and we're fortunate for that. And you can just kind of take off and go at your own speed, and you know, you don't want to kill yourself walking around. But you know, like that particular hunt, we were on a big. It's if you look on the map, it's kind of just a big circular knob, and there's a logging road that runs the ridge the whole way around, and it comes out to, you know, 4 or 5 miles, but usually guaranteed to at least strike one up at some point.
Yeah, we actually struck a couple up that day. And we'll talk about the hunt a little bit more here in a minute. But Derek, like run and gun, is that something that you like to do? Is that something you have any tips or tactics you can share with that?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's the same. It's one of my favorite tactics. I keep kind of going back on Adam, just elaborating on him. It's, you know, when you're especially upstate, you can cover so much. There's so much play, so much ground to cover up there. I mean, you can literally, it's like Adam said, you can get carried away with 10, 12 miles, but you know, like there's a lot of places where Adam and myself hunt too back home here where it's literally like a 20-acre plot. You know, there's no run and gun there. You know, it's, you know, you sit there and you're sitting there from daybreak till noon or whenever the end of the day of the hunt is, depending on which state you're in.
And to expand upon that, like even if, you know, I know this talk is, you know, we're going to be pretty particular to the state of Pennsylvania, but even if you're hunting an area, you know, say you have a couple private properties or, you know, you're by yourself and you don't want to drop way in by yourself. You know, it's not illegal to drive down the road, get out of your vehicle, you know, walk 100 yards in the woods and give a call down a hollow. You know, it's you can learn more about an area and new areas. You know, you may call down a spot you never touched the woods in before, and you get down in there and it's the most beautiful spot you've ever seen. And, you know, you learn so much just no matter what style of hunt you're doing, whether you're bouncing around properties or going way back in, just cover ground. That's all it comes down to with turkey hunting.
And that's how I killed my first gobbler. It's funny you brought that up with the whole driving around thing. You know, that's part of the whole running and gunning too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're not going to want to sit in your truck, you know, driving down a road that's 40 miles long and it's a 2-lane, you know, highway, and you're going to be calling. No, get on one of those back roads upstate, get anywhere, you know, pull over. If you see a holly, like, you know, call, especially, you know, late in the morning too, whenever, get one going, and you're, you know, you get on one, you're going to be looking at new land and everything. So it's part of the whole driving is with the run and gun too.
Yep, for sure. So these guys touched on a couple great, you know, things behind the whole run and gun concept. And like I said, that it's by far my favorite type of turkey hunting is running and gunning. I think it's the biggest rush, you know, when you're walking on the top of a ridge and you call and you hear one get fired up, and then, you know, you go, you get set up and the bird comes in hot. That is hard to beat. But I'm going to go on the record, you know, and make sure to tell you guys this. And I'll ask these guys' opinion too, but run and gun, it's not the most effective way to kill a bird. You'll run into call shy birds. You'll run into different situations that you might have just came through at the wrong time of the day, and there's birds there. There could be other hunters. There's a lot of different reasons that run and gun doesn't always work, but there are more effective ways. But as we all said, it's one of the most exciting ways. And for me, it's like, if I'm going to go hunting, I want to be excited. I want a reason to get out of bed, and just sitting in a blind over a field with a decoy that just doesn't really do it for me. But I mean, there's definitely other ways to kill some birds. We're going to cover as many of these topics as we can. So what's your guys' thoughts though, on just the, how effective running gun is compared to some other options?
Well, it's kind of biased for me just because it's pretty much, well, in PA at least, it's the only hunting we do. You know, we're not setting up in fields. I've killed one turkey in Pennsylvania in a field in my life. And, you know, upstate, we pretty much strictly run and gun, and I'm all about all kinds of legal methods to take a turkey. I have no problem killing them off decoys, no problem with fanning. You know, if it's legal, by all means, take advantage of it and do what you need to do to kill that bird. But yeah, mostly all run and gun for us.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said some of those points. And so like, and once again, he's referring to like the state game land. So like, yeah, hunting a field in the state game lands, it's not going to happen. There's going to be other hunters. Unless you have like some secret access to something that nobody knows about way back in, the birds just aren't going to be out there in the day. You really need to have private property for that. And so Adam, you touched on this, and I was going to wait a little bit in the podcast to mention, you know, to cover it, but like let me hear about the whole fanning and some of the Midwestern tactics you have and how effective they are.
Yeah, well, I've never really I've seen the videos and all that until I never had the opportunity to try it in Pennsylvania, because where we hunt in Pennsylvania, once you see the bird, you can pretty much kill them. So as far as seeing birds far off and getting the fan on them, it just wasn't really an option. And then when I went out to Nebraska, the boss of the outfitter, said, just try it. I'm telling you, it works. And sure enough, first time popped up the fan, four gobblers came in within 10 yards and we killed all four of them. And after that, pretty much didn't want to ever do anything else, because it was, it's just awesome. I mean, we killed birds that were, damn near touching the fan when they got shot. And it's just completely different out there, because in Pennsylvania, you're usually working one gobbler or maybe, two or three together at best. And you're not working a flock of birds. You know what I mean? Out in Nebraska, you're battling, there's one gobbler and there's 10 hens, or there's a gobbler and a couple jakes and, a satellite tom and a bunch more hens. There's such a dominant structure within their flock. And out there, if you can get a fan, we would get down a fence line or something, a little bit of cover just to lay there. And I would put my hunters behind me and pop up the fan and then, get their attention. And then a lot of times we pull the fan down, inch up a little bit closer, and then pop the fan up again. And usually the second time, once they see that they're being challenged, it's game on. And don't get me wrong, it is an absolute rush. If you have the opportunity and the ground to do it safely, by all means try it, because it is an absolute blast. But it's very situational. And, if you get a lone tom out there, he's probably not going to, decoy to a fan. It has to be a situation where there's multiple birds and, just a power structure within them.
That's awesome. Yeah. I've never done the fan thing. I think it would be great. Derek, you got to do that now?
Yeah, I didn't actually witness the whole fanning out in Nebraska when Jeremy and I were out, the same outfitter Adam was at. But I wanted to do it so bad. But I mean, the Midwest is kind of touching on back with what you were originally asking with the whole running gun. Out there, running and gunning could be very useful too. But I'm not kidding you. It's just, there's turkeys everywhere. I mean, there really is. I know the first morning at Jeremy and I were out there, we were sitting in a blind over decoys. And, we didn't kill any that morning. But, and I can hunt like that in the right area, especially if you're scouting a couple of weeks before the season, you're just not running into birds. But, historically, an area where you generally see birds throughout the year, at that point, I might throw the decoy out and, sit there all morning. But running and gunning, man, that's like you said, Jimmy, it's not the best, it's not the worst, but I mean, that's just, if you're like chasing like the adrenaline rush of, firing one up, I think that's the way.
You can't describe it. And it's like, it just breaks that morning silence.
And the success rate, I'm not saying it's great by any means. I mean, my God, Adam, and we've all hunted turkeys for years, and it's not like you run into them every single day and you get a
No, I mean, we're not consistently killing a bird every single year in Pennsylvania.
I'd say between the three of us every year, that's what brings us back. We might not kill one every year, but man, when you hear that first gobble of the year and that big open bark was hollow, man, you just can't beat it.
To hit on that, you're running gun in Pennsylvania, you're chasing, the sound of that gobbler. And then in areas like Nebraska, like we were talking about, your running gun is you're chasing the sight.
Like a spot and stalk.
Yeah, it's more of a spot and stalk, put yourself in the position to kill that bird. A lot of birds you kill out there, you might never hear them gobble. You're just you're seeing them and using the terrain to your advantage to get where you need to be to kill that bird. And, you know, a lot of times once you get in close on them, if they don't know you're there, all of a sudden you give a call or something, you know, you can strike them up because you're getting in their territory there. But it's, you know, in Pennsylvania, you're chasing the sound. Out west, you're doing a little more of a spot and stalk type hunt,
which can
in a lot of cases, yeah, which is still a blast.
Like, you know? For instance, not to get off topic, but like when I was out in Nebraska, the first one I killed was a Jake, and
but that's what I said, man. This guy loves turkey hunting, so like you weren't even upset. Well, so don't downplay it.
I won't get off topic and get into that.
Don't downplay it, man.
That was something for that was hard for me to watch. I had three Jakes just beating the heck out of a decoy. I'm like, looking back at my guide, like, do I shoot him? Like, what do I do? And I'm like, I can't take it anymore. Like the safety off, and the rest was history. But no, like, so that, for instance, that bird, we killed that one. That was, I think it was around noon, actually. You can hunt all day out there. And that was a run and gun situation. We called and literally, like, I think it was like six gobblers went off. And we're just like, oh, wow. And the setup was horrible. But long story short, three Jakes came in. I could see six longbeards, giant birds, like 80, 90 yards on actually on the neighbor's property. And the three Jakes came under the fence and I cracked one. But the second bird, literally, Jared, I don't know. I think we were there for 2 hours and we were just sitting there in a field with a decoy. You know, bird fired up, came right into the decoy, killed him. Now, granted, like I said, that's Nebraska. That's not going to happen every time in Pennsylvania, public or private. But yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a greater population of birds out there. But, you know, one of the things I want to touch on, too, like for guys having trouble killing turkeys. First off, I mean, there's got to be turkeys where you're hunting. I mean, that's kind of the obvious, and it's not real hard to scout for sign. I mean, they're only active during daylight hours, and walking logging roads, you can usually see if there's any turkey poop. And a lot of times in the same areas that you hunt in the fall if you're deer hunting and you see them, they're likely going to be there, but you got to make sure they're there. But, you know, one of the big things that we struggle with here in Pennsylvania, and this is especially true right around where Serviceide headquarters is that there's a lot of hunting pressure. And, you know, just because you don't hear birds gobbling does not mean they're there. So let's have a little discussion here, you guys, about how to kill a bird when they're not gobbling and you're hunting not sight, but you're hunting like in the hardwoods like we have here. And either you guys can go first.
Well, when it comes to pressured birds, you know, it's no big secret that less is more. Just soft calling very intermittently. Just a lot of times if it's late season, you know, even if I have a bird that's fired up late season, I'll call once every 20, 30 minutes. Because from that first call, he knows where you're at and he knows how to get to you and knows his best route to do that. And, you know, really it's less is more, and especially around down home here where you have greater population of hunters and not as much land to run around on. We have turkeys everywhere on our public land down here and it is hard to kill them. It's difficult. It separates the men from the boys killing them down here. And, just less is more. You know, go into an area where you've seen turkeys, you know, historically there's turkeys and you might not hear a bird all day, but just there's been days where you just stay stationary and soft call and wait. Cause you can be more successful staying in one spot the whole day, soft calling on a pot call or something than you can covering 10 miles in a day. If you're in the right spot and you know, you got tight lipped birds, sometimes that's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The biggest thing with around here is, like you guys said, there's so much hunting pressure, especially down home in comparison to like northern Pennsylvania. One thing though, you got to use your advantages. I mean, take a couple minutes, look at a map. I mean, there's just so much public land, especially like north central PA, western PA. I mean, you can literally get lost up there and you can really get away from guys. But going back on what Adam said, less is more, absolutely. And I actually learned that just a couple of years ago. I used to, like I said, I get fired up, I get on my call and I hear a bird, I'm screaming at him. And that actually got me in trouble for a lot of years. And for example, last year we heard a bird gobble on the roost. I think I called to him three times and he came in. It took him an hour to get in. He came right, like beelined us. But, you know, in that instance, that was public land, like I said, down in Maryland. And that was, you know, he gobbled three times. I mean, you know, we knew he was there. We roosted the night before, but there's a lot of times where when you're hunting and you're not hearing him, that can be frustrating. It can be, but mainly more so because we just love to, you know, have like a conversation, if you will. But you know, you can definitely kill them in the when they're silent. Going back on like you know, knowing an area where they might historically have been, you know, where an area where you've killed a bunch of birds before, you know, somebody that you know has. The other thing is just scouting too. Like Jimmy was saying, just find the birds. You know, anybody, you can go out there. Like I know of a couple spots you can go without scouting, and you can go there. Yeah, you'll hear a bird or two. But I don't know. I guess that I'm kind of getting off topic now. But like the whole, like I love the whole scouting part of it too. Like that's half the battle. I'm not saying I'm a big, you know, I'm not like scouting every freaking day, you know, before the season, but you know, just get out there three or four times, take a walk, you know, look for some scratchings, look for, you know, you might even run into some birds, listen for some gobbling, go out and spend some mornings before the season, you know, listen for them, see where they're roosting, and yeah, just get away from the hunters if you can. Some of them are crazy.
Oh, there's a lot of crazy hunters. And yeah, I mean, I think turkey hunting is one of the most dangerous sports, you know?
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you, the reason it's so dangerous is because as a hunter, I'm not sure if you even legally are allowed to in Pennsylvania, but you can't, you're not supposed to stalk a bird.
No, you're not. No. You're not legally allowed to do it. You're not allowed to use actual turkey feathers as a means of, you know, decoying. Like fanning is illegal technically in Pennsylvania.
Is it really? Yes. Okay.
And then going along with that, if you're going to try and stalk a turkey, good luck.
Right. Yeah. But the spin I'm trying to put on this whole thing, so like that's something you can't do that in Pennsylvania. There's states you can do it, but you got to be careful because you never know for hunters what's coming into you. You know, that's the danger. But from a biological standpoint, you know, the one of the reasons a lot of people have trouble killing a turkey is because you're going against science by not pursuing the turkey. So the turkey's out there, he's gobbling, he's strutting, he's putting on a show. He's trying to attract you in. He thinks you're a hen. He's trying to attract you in to him. And when you're set up on a bird and you're just sitting there and you're calling at it and you're wondering why it's not coming in, it's because he wants you to come to him. And that's one of the challenges. And a lot of guys new to turkey hunting, they'll sit there and they'll just keep calling and calling and calling. And finally, that bird's going to know something's not right, especially later in the season, you know,
yeah, I mean,
and they're going to shut up.
That's another thing I wanted to hit on is, you know, if you can turkey hunt with two guys, you can double your chances of killing that
Absolutely.
Bird. If you, we use this tactic all the time. You know, if you have someone that, you know, you designate with your buddy or it's his turn or your turn or whatever, set that guy up, you know, we like getting in, you know, as tight as we can to the bird where we know we're not going to spook him, whether that's going to be, you know, you can get 50 yards from him due to you have cover or ridge over he's over or anything. But whoever's calling, you know, drop him back 50 yards to start. And, you know, see, you want to act disinterested to that gobbler. So if he, you know, if you drop back 50 yards and he closes a little bit and then hangs up again, just keep working off and just act like you're feeding, do soft calling, putts, scratch the ground, whatever you got to do to move him where you need him to go. I mean, Jarob Decker was with us on a hunt this spring with my dad, and we worked this bird from about 7:30 till I think we killed him around 10. And when he ended up killing, or when my dad ended up killing the bird, I was probably close to 200, 250 yards behind my dad when he killed that bird. Just the bird would keep the same distance from me as I called and moved away. But if I stopped moving, he stopped moving. So it was cat and mouse, just pulling him, trying to get him in the path of where the gunners were sitting. And after three, four attempts, we were lucky he stayed hot the whole morning. After three, four attempts, we finally got a shot on him and done that. And I can't tell you how many times where I was by myself, you know, trying to do that same thing, run back, call and move up. And, you know, it's a lot more difficult by yourself, but if you have two guys, use that as to your advantage and, you know, play that game, dropping back, calling and working that bird where you need him to go.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many different scenarios in the turkey woods. And like Adam said, if you can have two, I mean, you can even have three up to even four guys, not so much for the calling, but, you know, even if it's something as little as, you know, like, you know, a guy steps back 20 yards from the gunner, And, you know, he's literally like Adam said, just making turkey sound. Like, you don't have to be calling, but make like a scratching sound. You know, a lot of times, like Adam said, it's so thick, you know, you can really get right up on birds without spooking them and without them seeing you, of course. And if they can just hear that little bit, you know, that could make or break something. So, but going back, kind of might be getting off topic again, I'm not sure. But like Adam said, like what we do is like, even if it's first thing in the morning, like say you roost a bird, which in my opinion, I don't roost that many birds before this, you know, before the morning hunt, but say you have them roosted, you get in there as close as you can. And don't, I personally don't like to treat, like when they're in the roost calling, some people, I'm sure there's other opinions. I personally don't, but just listen, see if he's gobbling. You should, if you're lucky enough, you can hear him fly down. That's when I'd start calling, but just jump right in on top of him. Just be careful that you're not kicking him out of there.
So, all right, let's dive in a little bit of theories here. When
my favorite.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is what makes things fun, right? We got to make ourselves a bit vulnerable here. But, you know, when a bird is up on roost, all right, maybe I'll just start just so you can see where I'm going with this. And I just want to hear what you guys have to think. But I always feel that when a bird is up on roost, he starts to gobble in the morning. And some birds are really vocal and some are less. But in my mind, he's just letting the girls know, hey, here I am, you know, and when it gets daylight, we're going to fly down and we're going to flock up together. And so there's times that I've seen where birds are really vocal first thing in the morning and they get quiet. And what I believe happens is that, you know, I mean, these birds aren't dumb. He knows how many turkeys that he has. And he literally, a lot of times, if you guys have ever been close to a turkey on the roost, a lot of times the hens are coming down first and those hens will actually pitch down and that turkey will watch them and he'll watch them come in. He'll do a head count and he'll be like, all right, everybody's here. He'll pitch down and then they'll just silently go off. And that's the reason that you can hear a bird real vocal on the roost and then it gets real quiet. So what's your guys' thoughts about what they're doing up there?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times they are roosted with hens and, you know, it's tough to beat the real thing. You can try as hard as you want. But a lot of times they are roosted in the vicinity of a hen and they're screaming on the roost and usually the hen's going to pitch down in their direction. And even if she doesn't pitch down in the direction and he knows she's over there somewhere, he's going to pitch down in her direction. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're on the other side of that, you're in trouble. If you can call all you want, he knows which one's which. And I wouldn't necessarily say he has a head count, but you know, he knows what's going on. He knows the game.
So does he know their voices though? So like, oh, this is Loretta over there.
I can't expand upon
that. I just want to know what your thoughts are. This is the Whitetail Theories podcast. We got to have some of this.
I think to a point, absolutely, because turkeys are, you know, they're like deer, like they're a family, like they're not going to be
social.
They're social, like they're family, like
right,
like that. Like there could be a 5-year-old hen out there. And there could be a 5-year-old gobbler, like they're gonna know each other's sound.
They know who's who, right?
This is my opinion.
This is good because nobody's ever talked about this on an open mic that I've ever heard.
No, if we have a spot upstate that we hunt, that there's this old raspy hen that does a Yelp series that's longer than any. You know, first time I heard it, I'm like, that is the worst hunter I've ever heard.
Been there.
I mean, this thing squawked for like 30 seconds straight yelp and just all broken. It sounded like someone just hammering on an unchalked box call yep. for 30 seconds. I'm like, this guy is an idiot.
Enough time in the woods
and turns out I started, you know, yakking at her and she came up through screaming. And, you know, we knew that it was this particular hen. And then every time we went back in there that season, we would hear her and went back the following year. Called her in again, squawking. She stole her gobbler countless times. So I think if we can tell that that's a particular hen, then the gobbler will know that's a particular hen. How much I think they're just trying to get busy as much as they can the same way.
Let's take this a little further down the rabbit hole. So do you think that the old boss hen actually want to protect him and say, all right, this is danger?
I don't think that.
No, I don't think she's saying it's dangerous. I think she just wants him.
It's just one of those things like, that's a good question. In my opinion, I wouldn't say no because, I mean, you guys both, everybody here has seen it. Like when a gobbler's fired up, he don't care. Like if you got a hot gobbler, I'm not saying they're easy to kill because there's not an easy turkey to kill. But man, when they're fired up, they have one thing on their mind.
It's the nookie.
The nookie.
But yeah.
No, that's great. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about best time to kill birds. And
I mean,
who wants to tackle this first? Derek, I want to hear you first. Best time to kill birds, and give a couple of different times of the day.
Sure. I mean, obviously, first thing in the morning is obviously a good time to kill them. I personally don't think it's the best time. I think the reason it's good is because, I mean, as you guys all know, turkeys are most vocal first thing in the morning, whether it's on the roost or right when they hit the ground. So, you know, knowing that, you can, you know, you hear one. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll sit, you know, somewhere in the morning just on a gas line or power line somewhere where there's an open area where I can hear. And I'll just listen for them, and whichever one's closest to me or whichever one has the best situation, that's where I'm going after. But I lost my train of thought there for a second.
So the best time to kill them.
Yeah, sorry. So, you know, in between sunrise and the first, I'd say hour and a half is a good time. Another good time is, and you can kill them all day long, but I think one of the better times is like that 10:30, 11 o'clock time. Even up till noon, you know, a bunch of those hens, especially in Pennsylvania, our season opens a little later than most, and that's May. Like the first, was it the first weekend in May?
Typically, yeah.
So a lot of those hens, you know, come 9, 10 o'clock, they're going back to the nest. And, you know, if you get a bird that's still fired up at 10 o'clock, you know, there's going to be a lot less hens around him at that time than, you know, up until, I'd say, around 9:30, 10 o'clock. And, you know, you can really get one fired up then. I've killed a couple of them like that. I killed my, was it second longbeard in PA at 12 noon on the dot. So I'd say the first hour and a half is, you know, hunting light, and about 10:30, 11 o'clock, 10:30 to 12.
Adam, what's your thoughts on best time to kill a bird?
I mean, personally, my favorite time is that 9:30 to 10:30 period when they're leaving the hens, but depends on the time and the season as well. Like that first week, you know, they're not super henned up yet, and you can, you know, have a pretty good chance of killing one off the rooster, you know, within that first hour and a half. But after that, it's all about that late morning. I keep going back to this hunt this past year upstate, but I mean, it was such a pure turkey hunt that, you know, so many different aspects of turkey hunting in one, that it's a good example, because we heard that bird, you know, not right off the roost, but, you know, 7:30 a.m. And we knew he was with a hen right away. He gobbled at every call, but he was gobbling, you know, going the complete opposite direction up on top of this opposite mountain. And we knew he was with a hen, but he was the only bird we were hearing at the time. So we're like, well, let's go up there and try and, you know, make her mad and see if we can draw her in. And went up there and fooled around with him for about an hour, hour and a half. And he went back down to the bottom of the mountain where we just were with this hen. We had seen the gobbler and the hen, and he followed her down there, and he went down there and he went quiet for about 20 minutes. Now it's about 9:15. And I was just hoping in my mind that we didn't spook him. And I was just hoping he was down there breeding her, or, you know, she was heading to the nest and he was going to lose interest. And after 20 minutes of silence, he gobbled. And then I didn't call. 5 minutes later, he gobbled again and just slowly started firing back up again. And then we got on him really hard and really called at him hard, and he gobbled as hard as he could and came right back up the same path he went down. But this time we had readjusted for him and were able to get a shot on him. We ended up killing him between 9:30 and 10 o'clock. And I can't tell you how many times that's happened. Where, you know, if you're working a bird first thing in the morning, he goes quiet, don't be afraid to circle around later in the morning to that exact same spot, because 9 times out of 10, he's there and he's alone at that point, and you can get an opportunity to kill him.
Awesome. So you guys nailed this content here as far as what I wanted to relay. And, you know, something that it took me, I didn't know this stuff for years as a turkey hunter, because I would just go out and run and gun. But, you know, you got to think about the biology. So we didn't talk about the food sources yet, but, you know, during the spring gobbler season, the spring turkey, the whole goal of these males, the toms, is to go out and breed, you know, and the jakes, any chance that they get, they're going to breed too. And that's why a jake's a lot of times easier to kill. But, you know, to me, I don't really care what you kill in turkey season. Like, as long as it gets you fired up, like, that's all that matters. But one of the things with the turkeys that these guys mentioned, and I just want to go into a little deeper detail, is that the turkeys, the hens in the morning, they'll get with the tom. Okay. And then they go back to their nest and lay an egg. And that's when they're vulnerable. So you have a good opportunity in the morning to kill a tom. A lot of times morning is a really good time to kill jakes because you start calling and these jakes are following everything around you. They're kind of like a satellite elk, right? They're on the outskirts and that tom, he'll kick their butts if he sees them. But those jake get a chance to come running in because they think they get a chance at their nookie. And that's why a lot of times it's easy to kill them. But in the afternoon, later in the morning, it's a great time because the hens, they're preoccupied and they're going back to lay an egg. And those toms, they're still looking to do their thing. So it's just like a rut and buck. I mean, same concept. So this has been really good content so far. Adam, I know you got a lot of knowledge of the turkeys, and I'd like to hear what the differentiating thing that you've seen as far as the food though, because the food. See, here's something about turkeys. I like to just reiterate this, is that turkeys, unlike a whitetail, are not nocturnal. So like you, half the battle is done. You know they're moving during the day. It's not like they can move all night on you. So like, if you know what they're feeding on, if you know where they're at, like they're going to come through eventually. And patience, like can't stress enough how important patience is. But with the turkeys, Adam, what do you see that they like to key in on for food sources? And then talk about your experience with the Nebraska tail.
Well, it's the same thing as, you know, if you compare it to whitetails in the rut, you know, that buck, he's not particularly worried about eating, you know, they'll drop weight, but he's going to be where the does are that are still feeding, you know? And so even though they're not eating, you still need to be where the food's at a lot of cases. And the turkey's the same way. A turkey will cut, you know, 25% of its gobbler will cut 25% of his body weight by the end of the season. But you know, upstate where we hunt, a lot of the times it's all beech nuts. We hunt a lot of big beech flats and oak flats and all that. And, one thing the turkeys really like up there is all the goldenrod. You know, goldenrod will grow in more of the open areas. So if there's any like grassy bottoms or stuff like that, or even a lot of times on old logging roads, which sets up perfect for, you know, killing a bird. But a lot of goldenrod, small seed, stuff like that. Down home here it's a different game because there's a lot more agriculture up there. There's none. Down here you're hunting your, you know, typical, you know, cut cornfields and stuff like that. I couldn't really tell you what all they're eating down here besides agriculture. Some worms, you know.
Yeah, you're the big woods hunter.
Night crawlers, you know, trout worms, whatever you got available.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I mean, it's hard to elaborate kind of a bunch on that because, I mean, I'm not saying it's just food sources, but, you know, I mean, that's a big part, but, you know, you can only go so far with food. But like Adam said, especially even down home here on the mountains, like just north, not upstate, but yeah, you'll run into your beech nuts, a bunch of acorns, bunch of oaks. But each year is a little different too, and this can go in. You can use this for whitetails, of course, too. You know, one year you could produce a ton of beech nuts; it could be a mass crop. You know, but the next year you go there and there's none. You know, so just find the food. I know that they love bugs too, like rainy mornings. If you have like a field edge, you know, more so for the private, or even like upstate, like the big gas lines, like, I mean, you know how big they are. They're huge. A lot of times you'll see birds cruising those, the big open areas, and, you know, bugs and vines and a lot of goldenrod too upstate. But yeah, I mean, just find the food. If you're not finding any sign, you know, they got to eat, you know, and they're eating all day long. They're not like deer where they kind of hang out in an area. They're, in my opinion, they're going, man. They're, yeah, wherever the food is.
And one thing is, like, even if you don't know what food's in the area, fortunately, you can just take off walking, and turkey scratchings aren't hard to decipher from, right, from other stuff. Once you see where a bunch have been scratching, it looks like the whole hillside's tore up. So you can go over there, inspect, try and figure out what they're eating. But I think they pretty much make do with what they have. They don't need they're not reliant on a giant food source being available. They can pretty much make do with, I think more of where a turkey lives is based off of topography more than anything. And being able to, turkeys, like everyone always says, turkeys like these big, you know, hardwood areas where they can see forever, and fields and stuff like that, so they can see a predator before it comes, because that's their line of defense, is their sight. But I can't tell you how many times we've killed turkeys in some of the nastiest clear cut stuff. And, you know, I think their core area where they summer and everything is in these big wide open areas, or see as much as it comes. But when it comes down to, you know, the mating season, you can kill them just about anything. If you find the right tom, he'll, you know, people say, you know, you can only call him uphill, you can only call him downhill, you can't call him across a creek. If you find the right bird, he'll do anything.
Yeah, no, that's funny. People do say that stuff. Yeah. And
it is situational, bird to bird. You know, some birds will follow that strict thing, can't call them across the creek. I've watched birds fly across, you know, whole valleys into a call. It's, and you get dumbfounded by it, but it just goes to show it's all bird to bird, you know.
Yeah.
You can kill any turkey on, you know, a specific day, you know, but you may hunt a turkey 30 days and can't kill him, and then that one day you just come sprinting in
4 years, and then you in there the next, you know, first day of the next year, man.
But I'm glad you brought the scratches. I don't know why we didn't bring that up. I mean, turkey scratches are really easy to see. A lot of times you can find their poop, though, if you're walking in these logging roads and stuff. That's a lot of times where they cruise, and that's going to bring me to my next topic, and that is hunting strut zones. So who wants to tackle that and what a strut zone is?
Yes, I'll go. I wouldn't say I'm big on it or not big on it. I mean, it's situational, you know. I keep going back to, like, the upstate gas, like, you know, the gas lines. I'm more so talking like Elk County, like where we used to hunt, just outside of Ridgeway. I mean, you get up there and you know, where a gas well would cross with another one. I mean, you're looking at literally a 3-acre field in the middle of the hardwoods, you know, or even, you know, just in the mountain. You know, I think that'd be a great place for a strut zone. Like, now if I'm doing that, I'd be running decoys. That's just me. Like, you know, I wouldn't run, if I was hunting the hardwoods and I have a bird going once in a blue moon, we can get into this too with decoys.
Let's make that for the next topic,
yeah,
the decoys.
But for a strut zone, oh yeah, I think that'd be an awesome, great place on those big gas lines. You don't need a, you know, 100-acre cornfield or 100-acre, you know, cut bean field or something, you know. I don't know. That's just my take on it. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have their designated areas that they like to, you know, go showboat their stuff. I can't say I've, you know, if I say I'm setting up on a strut zone, it's more than likely a bird I've been trying to hunt for a couple of days now, and I know where he's going to fly down. I know where he's going to do his, you know, early morning show at, and I'm trying to put myself in that position, you know, where I think his hen's going to be or his hen's going to draw him by. And that first, you know, 30 minutes or an hour where they shut up, you know, they're more than likely just standing in one spot strutting. You may think they all worked off, they're gone. Nope. More than likely he's within the same 10-foot radius just strutting with his hen. And I think that goes into another thing with, if you're calling at a bird and you know, he's fired up and he goes quiet, and you know, you give it some time, and you know, you get anxious as a turkey hunter. You want to, I know I do as a running gunner, like I want to, you know, if a bird shuts up, I want to, you know, I have a bad habit of wanting to get up, take off and find the next one. You know what I mean? And, you know, we have that time limit in Pennsylvania before noon. So in your head the whole time, you're like, all right, I got to move on to the next one, make this happen. But if I had any advice, it's whenever you think you want to stand up and move on to the next one, wait 24 minutes. I probably would have. 20 minutes.
Exactly.
I probably could have killed double the amount of birds I've killed if I would have just held tight longer than I ended up doing, because I can't tell you how many times you stand up, you walk 10 feet, and then you spook the bird. You know, he was right there. And if they're quiet, they're either standing in one spot strutting, or they're moving. They're coming towards you or going away from you. And more times than not, if you're on him and he's gobbling hard and shuts up, he's coming. You know, he'll.
And when he does that, I'd recommend just stay quiet. He knows exactly where you're at.
Yeah.
He'll pinpoint. He'll pin you down the tree.
I'm a firm believer in they know exactly where you are from your first sound that you make.
Less is more.
Yep.
Oh, their hearing's incredible. And I'll tell you something else that I've seen turkeys do. It's like they'll use terrain to their advantage, and they'll pop their head up like a little periscope, mm-hmm. and their eyes are so good and their head is so small, you won't even see it. Yep. And if you do, you had better been sitting still when you saw it, because they saw you first. And that is their best line of defense, is their vision.
That,
I mean,
brings up a good point.
It's incredible.
Well, not a point, but way I used to hunt them, when I'd hear a bird when I was a kid, like with my grandpa, you know, he had me in the woods when I was 8 years old. I was running around with him forever. And I'd be like, oh, cool, we heard one like down in a hollow. And my first instinct is, all right, get to the edge so you can see down over and you can see him coming.
Right.
Well, and this is, I mean, like I said, everybody has their different ways of hunting. But what I always do, if I hear something like that, you know, down in a hollow, I just back off from that where you can literally just see the edge of that hollow, like 40, 50 yards. Just sit there. He'll come. I mean, I'm not saying 100% of the time he's going to pop his head up right there where you're at. But that's just another.
No, I couldn't agree more with that. Like, don't get down in there where you're calling and can see, you know, 300 yards down to the bottom. Get back to where,
stay up,
you know, you need him to come look for you. Like, if you're calling in a wide open hollow,
right,
he looks up there, he sees that you're not there,
right,
he ain't coming. So if you get back over a ridge or something and make him come look at you and put yourself in a position that as soon as he pops over, he's in range and you can kill him.
Yeah,
you want it done as quick as possible, at least where we hunt.
Don't go running 90
yards. Yeah, because guys will come bum rushing you like crazy.
Like I said, 40, 50 yards off the edge of that. Get on top.
And I think that ties into, I mean, most of all of us, you know, in our group here, we're not really decoy hunters, you know.
Well, that's what I want to talk about,
yeah. We can tie that into the next thing, but I know I out in Nebraska, we kill a ton over decoys. But in Pennsylvania, I might have killed one bird over a decoy. So most of the time, you're relying on your calling and you're relying on, you know, the topography to put that bird in range. You got to use, you know, all the little hidden spots to your advantage. And so that when that bird pops up, you can kill him.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. So this is something I feel guilty of this. Like, I don't know how many times I've gone hunting with a decoy and then never even use it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's like the heat of the moment. You get set up.
I mean,
and it's
one
like
of those deals. It's like, especially depending on where you're hunting in the situation. But, you know, if I'm always debating if I want to take it or not, just take it. You know, it's a little bit extra weight, but at least, you know, you had it.
Yeah.
You know, if you use it, great. If not, well.
So let me ask you first, Derek, how do you set your decoy up when you're in a solo situation?
I mean, I don't get too, like I said, I really don't use them a whole lot. I personally have never killed one over a decoy except out in Nebraska. Last year we ended up killing one. I forget what we had. I think we had one or two hens and a Jake. That was kind of a screwed up situation. Last year was, oh gosh, if you guys remember the Pennsylvania opener, it was windy and just, in my opinion, we didn't, I don't think, heard a bird the whole morning. And there was an instance, we were hunting a little 20 acre lot. There was a field edge on the edge of the property. And it was so windy. I'm just, you know, cutting and everything. And we had, I think it was two hens and a Jake, and a bird came in silent. So in that case, I mean, setting them up wise, that was more my friend who actually killed that bird, set them up. I don't get too crazy over it. In Pennsylvania, you do got to be careful with, on the public land, you got to be careful with setting gobblers and Jakes out. I wouldn't say you can't do it, but just, you know, really make sure you're in an area where, you know, you're not hearing someone calling or, you know, you didn't see somebody just, you know, walk by you, because I'm telling you, people are crazy out there. But I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a big decoy guy, but I'm sure there's some.
But you still kill birds without the decoy.
Oh, absolutely.
Though, you know?
Oh, I've killed all my turkeys.
Yeah.
Like on my own, solo wise, by myself.
Well, this is refreshing to hear, because like most people are out there and they just talk about the mainstream stuff. Oh, I got X brand, you know, decoy or whatever.
And that's not to talk bad about decoys. I just, like I said, just me personally.
Yeah. I mean, but you don't need that to kill a bird. You know, you don't need a crazy great calling ability to kill a bird. As Adam said, like some of these birds sound worse than an actual hunter. What you need to be is patient and in the right area, and you will kill a bird. But patience is the biggest thing. But before we get off the decoy thing, so Adam, do you have any tips of how to use a decoy effectively this part of the country and then cover out in Nebraska?
In Pennsylvania, I always have a decoy in my vest. You know, whether I use it or not, I always have it because I always think I'm going to use it. And like I said, you know, you get excited and you're like, I can kill them without it. And then, I just carry a good old lone hen, Navy Nex hen, just because in Pennsylvania, our birds aren't super aggressive. And, out in the Midwest, you get those dominance structures within their flock. And, you know, you can put out, you know, out there, I would run two hens, a Jake and a Strutter. And pretty much as soon as a Tom would see the Strutter decoy, it was pretty much game over 90% of the time. It's just completely different. But out here where, you know, the toms aren't super, super aggressive, at least where we hunt, you know, if I do use the decoy, I'll just put out a lone hen. If I'm stuck in an area where I can't use the topography to my advantage, I'll try and use a decoy to my advantage. You know, you just got to take each situation for what it is, and sit back and think. For you get excited and you want to make a move, and half the time your excitement will ruin your hunt, get you in trouble. You try and get in too close, or you try to, maybe if I just get set up on, get a little closer over this ridge, and you bump him, or he hears you, or anything like that. Try it when you're setting up a bird. Try to, it's awesome to be excited. That's the reason why we turkey hunt, is to get you excited. It's in your face. But try and take 2 minutes to just think about the situation, what you can do to make the best of what you got. Cause a lot of times, there is no good situation. You just got to try and think, I need to get back forward.
Sorry. And don't overthink it either.
Yeah, you can do that too. We're all guilty of that as well.
Turkeys will drive you nuts if you chase them long enough.
Yeah, they do. I mean, we were fortunate enough in college. I would finish my finals, May 1st, and I was a bum, so I'd be like, all right, heading upstate for 2-3 weeks now, just nothing but turkey hunting. By the end of it, I was...
You're brain dead.
Brain dead, because you're getting outsmarted by something with a brain the size of, a marble day after day after day. But for some reason, we keep coming back, and that's why we do it.
Yeah, and that's one of the big debates I like to get in, is like, okay, so how smart is a turkey? And some people are like, oh, they're super smart. I mean, Derek, I'd like to get in the debate a little bit right here, but like, it's like Adam said, their brain's the size of a marble. And my personal opinion, because I want to hear what you have to say on the mic, Derek, my personal opinion is that they have a tiny brain, they're very paranoid, they're like a paranoid chicken, they have great vision, and that's why they're hard to kill, because they're so paranoid. But what's your thoughts on the turkey?
So I don't know if you remember this debate, I'm sure you do. What's smarter, a mature whitetail buck or a mature wild turkey? Well, and this was, oh my gosh, how long ago was
it? This is several years ago.
But I was all about, turkeys are way smarter. Jimmy said, and Adam's like, their eyesight's next to none. I mean, you cannot sneak up on them, nothing. But for the longest time, I'm like, yeah, turkeys are smarter. Well, my answer has changed over the years, big time. But how to compare it to like a whitetail.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough comparison. But so here's the thing. Okay. So this is super refreshing to hear, because here's the thing about turkeys, okay? Is that they have a will to survive. They live in the woods 24/7, right? They have excellent vision. They have excellent hearing. So if you know those things and you use that with your hunting to your advantage, and you know that they're timid, and that if there's a lot of pressure, like Pennsylvania or some of these other eastern states, well, maybe you approach the turkeys a little bit differently. If you have the luxury to hunt in the Midwest or further out west, like Nebraska, where the birds aren't as pressured, I mean, yeah, they're going to respond in a different way. But I do encourage, Midwest guys, and we have these hunt swap opportunities with the field staff, like, offer a swap up and come out here and hunt these birds and see what this is really about, because I guarantee it will make you a better hunter. But you need to pay attention to things. That's why this is so refreshing, Derek, because that just shows it to me that you matured as a hunter.
Oh, absolutely.
And you realize.
And I'm not, like I said, going back on that, I was just thinking about that. Sorry to cut you off.
No, it's all right.
But, I'm not saying, oh, yeah, whitetail, yeah, they're smarter than turkeys. Turkeys are dumb. I'm here to tell you. I mean, I haven't killed a ton of turkeys, but I mean, I remember a time Adam and I were up at his cabin. I think it was almost 2 straight weeks we killed between 4 of us, like in and out. A couple guys would come, a couple guys would. We killed one bird. I think it was 14 days.
Yep.
Oh,
We were into birds every day.
Yeah.
Sun up till noon every single day.
Every single day. They finally killed one the one morning. But like I said, that does not mean turkeys are dumb by any means. I've matured as a hunter, as you said. I was the kind of guy, I see a legal deer that's getting killed.
I'm not referring to that.
But like, I guess I think what happened with me is I changed my mentality as a hunter a little bit. I know a bunch of these guys will give me crap for it.
No, I think the excessive calling, right?
When you finally learn to chase like a mature whitetail,
yeah,
especially on public land, there's no way that there's an argument on which one's smarter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, mature whitetails are they're their own class, but like I said, I mean, and you talked about a couple of these things, Derek. Just being more patient, calling less, too much. And like, there's a lot of little things that guys can tweak to increase their success with turkeys. And I think for all three of us sitting at this table, you know, we're all very successful. I mean, Adam's got a ton of kills under his belt, especially with the guiding and stuff. But, you know, the thing about turkeys is that anybody can do it if you put your mind to it. But I'll be the first to say too, there's guys that kill a lot more turkeys than us. And, that's what's exciting, is because we can sit there and we can have these debates and talk about, you know, how smart is a turkey, or, you know, do they actually think this way, and other things that you can do to stack the chips in your favor. But there's the fact that there's guys that are more consistent and better hunters than us tell us that we can do a better job.
100%.
And then I want to kind of close out the segment tonight. I want to tell a story, or actually I want you to tell the story about the bird that we hunted, and you were in your bonus tag, and this was up in Potter County, PA, and it was probably one of my favorite turkey hunts to date. And I like just to share that story, because there's a lot of things that you can take away from that story that if you pay attention to it, that you can apply to make yourself a more successful public land run and gun turkey hunter.
Yeah, I mean, we were upstate in Potter County, Pennsylvania, and we were just, I was up for an 8 or 9 day stretch. And on the last day of my trip, I ended up just running into a new area just on a whim, and ended up killing a bird in the first 5 minutes of being in there. And I heard a ton of other birds. Now, this is mid to late season. It was, you know, maybe May 18th or 19th. I came home. And I got antsy again, and I said, Jimmy, let's go back up and try and get on a bird. So we drove up Friday night and went back into this spot, and still fairly new spot to me. It's just this big circular, you know, flat top with hollows dropping off in every direction. There's a logging trail that runs the rim the whole way around. And we had got on some birds early, screwed up on a couple, I believe. Out on the power line.
Well, here, let me back up a little bit. So this is where it's, because this is one of the reasons for me this is such a cool story. So we got out of the truck, and first off, it was like this steep ascent to get to the top of the ridge, but that's where we're going. So like, it really kicked my butt. It was a little humbling. And but we got up to the top, and we were right around the top when you got a bird fired up. And that's when we
was there another guy
heard an owl hoot.
Yeah.
And we were trying to debate if it was really an owl or a hunter. And then we got to the top of where this power line crested on the top of the hill. It was actually an intersection.
Yep.
And when we looked down the intersection, bam, there's another hunter. Yep. And he's on a beeline to this bird. So now I'm like, well, that bird's done. I mean, he was on it, and it was like, there was like, what are you supposed to do? Right.
No,
so
we just kept on trucking.
We just kept going a different direction.
And so we went around the backside and got into a couple birds that didn't want to work. And heck, it was pretty late in the morning. And I said, let's cut across this clear cut and get over to the other side where there's some better ground. And so we're cutting through this, you know, a second growth, all pencil trees, briars and all that. And
thick.
It was nasty.
We're trying to use our phones, and we couldn't move fast enough to check the GPS.
Yeah, our GPS wasn't
it was twisted up.
We just got turned around and all that. And then I was like, you know what, Jimmy? Every time I take a Snapchat and call, one gobbles.
This. Right.
So I get out my Snapchat, I call, and one gobbles. And he's pretty good ways off. We don't really even know.
Way off.
We know a general direction.
We didn't know how to get out of the patch.
Yeah. So I called once more to try and get a direction. He gobbled again and still couldn't, you know, put a pinpoint on him because it's on this flat and it can be deceiving.
Super deceiving.
So we're like, all right, well, let's try and get out of this clear cut to a little more opening so we can set up. Well, while we shut up and start moving, this bird is on the move. It's late morning now. He's lonely, and he is literally following us through this clear cut, gobbling. And I'm not calling because I want to get out of the clear cut to somewhere we can set up.
And that's where I was always like, come on, like call. And you were like, no. And that taught me so much, that this hunt, to be patient.
So we finally get to the edge of the clear cut, and the bird's literally coming through the clear cut. We were running away from the turkey, and that's no lie. So we get back off the clear cut, like 30 yards from it, turn around and face him. And he's gobbling hard. And then I think I called one time when we sat down.
Oh my gosh.
And Jimmy's sitting about 15 yards to my front and to the right of me.
I'm supposed to be the one shooting.
Yeah, Jimmy's the gunner on this one. So the bird shuts up and I'm sitting there. Maybe 10 minutes goes by and all of a sudden I hear the bird start spitting and drumming.
And I've never experienced
Jimmy
this in my life.
Had no idea what the spitting drum was. So I look up over to my right where Jimmy's sitting and his gun is not on his knee and ready to shoot. It's in his lap. And this, I just hear,
and my chest is going boom, 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 boom. I don't know what's going on.
And the bird's so close that like I can't be like, Jimmy, get your gun up.
Yeah, I couldn't see it.
So the bird's spitting drum for maybe 5 minutes and I see him start coming out to the edge of the cut. And he comes out and he's a little bit to the left of Jimmy and Jimmy's gun's still down. And, you know, it is. In my experience, as soon as you have a bird in range, he needs to die before he figures out what's going on here.
Yeah.
So the bird's about 30 yards to the left of Jim and his gun's in his lap. And I said to myself in my head, I said, Jimmy, you have 5 seconds. Well, I think I counted to one and I had to let him have it.
Yeah, I heard your safety click off. So the backstory was I did finally get my gun up, but there was just a little bit of foliage between me and the turkey. And really, I'm sure it wasn't enough to matter the full choke, but I was just afraid it was going to blow my pattern apart. And when I heard your safety, it was so quiet. You could hear a pin drop. I've never felt that. But, you know, my chest is concussing from the...
There's nothing like it.
Yeah, when they're close. From the spit drum.
That's when they're close.
Well, not only are they close, but they're like truly fired up too. It'll amazing.
It'll literally...
And I heard your safety just click, like it was just so distinct. I was like,
take it. It's like when
boom.
It's like when you hear a Ross Grosco, but like times 10.
Yeah.
But oh man, that was one of the best turkey hunts ever. I just wanted to share that. And that was your bonus tag for PA. So in PA, you get one spring gobbler tag, but if you before the season, you can purchase a bonus tag. And typically it seems like every time that you know we buy the bonus tag, it's like we jinx ourselves.
You can't even kill one then.
But you can't kill one, exactly.
As soon as you only get one tag, you kill one the first day and then you lose your mind.
Exactly. Because you can't buy another. And that rubs me the wrong way that you can't do that. But that's a totally different topic there. So guys, this has been a great podcast. We covered a lot of great things. Anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
No, just if you haven't done it, get out there and try it. You know, the best way to learn is you're going to screw up a million times. I've been doing it for 10 years and still screw up and you just learn from it. If I had one advice for anything, you keep saying less is more, but it holds true to pretty much every turkey hunter, especially on pressured birds, just less is more. Sit back and think about the situation and how you can use it to your advantage and, just make the best out of every situation you got.
Awesome. Derek, any closing?
I agree with that too, with everything, of course. I don't know. I guess the biggest thing for me would be is just get out there and just go and scout, go and hunt, go and, do research on public properties, look at maps. If you go in an area, that's one thing that's cool about turkeys, in my opinion. I think you can go into an area that's really cold. Meaning, you can go into an area that you've never scouted before that you like a whitetail, in my opinion, you have to, put time in, you got to scout, you got to know the area. With turkeys, say you're having a rough season, just go out and check a big chunk of public land out upstate, anywhere, wherever you're at. That'd be my biggest thing. Just get out there and scout and just enjoy it. And you will, like Adam said, you will screw up. Oh my gosh. I mean, if you don't screw up, you're not Eddie Solder, I can tell you that. But just keep after it. And with the calling, I mean, we didn't really get into a whole lot of that, but I won't get off topic too much. But you don't got to sound great. You don't have to sound like these world champs. The biggest thing is just really focus on a tempo with your call. You don't have to sound great. Just tempo, tempo, tempo. That's like the biggest thing. And less is more. But yeah.
Awesome, man. And I can't agree more with everybody that said this. If you want one tip that's going to help you be more successful, if you're not already super successful with turkeys, is less is more. Super, super important tip. So yeah, guys, I hope that you enjoyed tonight's podcast. It was really cool having two of my really good friends on here to talk about something that we're really passionate about. And, if there's one thing I can add in there too, like because Derek just touched on this, it's that one of my favorite things about turkey hunting is just getting out in the spring and stretching my legs. And that's the beauty. And one of the things I actually love about the fact you can only hunt till noon, even though the hunting sometimes gets good when the hens are at nest, is that it just forces you to just be able to relax. You're not stuck in a stand all day like deer hunting. And absolutely. I love that. And then, you know, and then we end up taking the fly rods out and making a fool of ourselves trout fishing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a wonderful time of the year. And another cool thing is too, it's a really easy type of hunting to share with your friends. And I think that's why the three of us were so excited to do this podcast together. Yeah,
absolutely. So grab yourself a shotgun, get a turkey call. Get out there.
Just get out there. Stretch out the legs. So guys, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Whitetail Theories. We'll talk to you soon.